I would rather see a sermon than hear one. And I'm sure you've heard that old saying more than once. Maybe after a particular homily here at St. Michael's, you've even said it yourself. It's trite, but nevertheless, it's a well-known saying. It's also true. Yes, just because a phrase is well-worn doesn't make it less than true. Be doers of the word, not hearers who deceive themselves, says the letter of James. I have heard that said before. Now, of course, I'm not a big fan of the letter of James. James is full of pithy truisms that everybody already knows. As a preacher, I like a text that's weird, unfamiliar, tough to comprehend, in need of nuanced translation. That's what I like. If the whole Bible were like the letter of James, why, you wouldn't need preachers, because who needs a preacher to remind you of what you already know? Yet maybe that's reason enough to linger this morning over this well-worn saying from the letter of James. We already know it, but knowing this, be doers of the word, not merely hearers, is not our problem. Here, doing is the problem. Jesus never asked his hearers, do you agree with me? Or does that sound reasonable to you? What do you think? Jesus wanted more than agreement. Follow me, he said. Jesus is looking for discipleship, not simply agreement. Perhaps that's why we so often turn the gospel into some kind of intellectual problem. Upon hearing scripture, we tend to ask, now how could that have happened? Or what do I think about that? Modernity specializes in understanding. The trouble is that scripture doesn't want to be understood. Scripture wants to be put into action. Scripture wants to be accomplished. So we step back, we ponder, we think, we reflect. When the Bible longs for us to get up and get moving and perform the text, rather than just rolling it around in our mouths like some fine cognac. I remember years ago discussing with a group of people what they looked for in a good sermon. I like a sermon that helps me think about things in a new way, was their predominant response. I like a sermon that engages my mind, that spurs my thinking and my reflection. And that sounded good to me. After all, I like to preach interesting, thought-provoking sermons when I can. Yet the more I thought about it, the more I wondered if their response was not quite right. There's something about us that loves to think that worship is about sitting and listening and receiving. But this morning, the letter of James links listening to deceit. Be doers of the word, not hearers only, who deceive themselves, the letter of James says. We deceive ourselves into thinking that we have done faith when we have merely listened, reflected, pondered, and agreed. I've often heard people say about church on Sunday morning, I think of church as a filling station. I come here empty and during the service, I get filled up so I can make it through the week. See? Passive, not active. It makes church into a place where we come and we sit back and we say to the clergy, to the choir, to the organist, okay, do your thing for me, fill me up. No, the test for good worship, the mark of good church, is not what we do here for an hour. It's what we do outside these doors for the rest of the week. The world is right to judge the truth of the gospel on the basis of the sort of lives the gospel is able to produce. Do we really look like the God whom we praise here on Sunday morning? Have our songs, our prayers changed us, made us into that which we profess? That's the test, says James. The late child psychiatrist Robert Coles, in his book, The Spiritual Life of Children, recounted the story of Ginny, a young girl from an underprivileged family who was bright, articulate, imaginative, and had a keenly developed sense of spirituality for somebody her age. Ginny once told Coles about her uncle who was wounded in Vietnam. He was still nervous, upset, and prone to frequently bursting into tears. And she wondered how God must have felt during the violence of the war. If my uncle cries now, she said, God must have cried too. God must have wept, don't you think? One day, Jenny was walking home, and along the way, she encountered an elderly woman who seemed lost and confused. Jenny asked the woman if she needed help, and the woman, with some relief, responded, if you could, that would be wonderful. Jenny discovered that the woman had been walking to her daughter's house, but had lost her way and was disoriented. She showed Jenny the address she had with her, where she needed to go. Although Ginny was now late getting home for her chores, she had a sense that getting this confused older person to her destination was the chore she most needed to be about at that moment. She walked with her, she listened to her as the woman spoke of her own life and the challenges she had as she found herself increasingly befuddled. When they got to the lady's daughter's house, she told her daughter that Ginny was sent by God. And as they parted, she told Jenny that she would pray to God for her, and then she kissed Jenny on the forehead. On the way home, Jenny wondered what it would be like to be old. And she wondered if, when she herself was old, whether God would send some kid like her to help. Maybe God did put me there, Jenny thought, and maybe God gives you these hints of what's ahead of you, and you should pay attention to them, because it's God speaking to you, Jenny said. Now ask yourself, would you rather have, if you were that befuddled, lost old woman, a brilliant sermon on the prevenient grace of God that goes ahead, or would you rather have Ginny leading you to your daughter's house? And if you were Ginny, would you rather have a brilliant sermon on the shortness and uncertainty of life, or would you rather have that confused elderly woman to remind you that life is short and uncertain, and none of us make it out of here without the help and love of others? There in that little neighborhood, that little girl helped a stranger and did the chore that most needed to be done, and the presence of God was made manifest. As that old children's hymn puts it, they will know we are Christians by our love. Now we already know that. We really do know that any sermon which is seen in deeds of love or compassion or divine justice is more effective than the one that is spoken and heard. How many people have been hurt or scandalized by the actions or lack of actions of those who profess to follow Jesus? I often tell a couple preparing for marriage where one of the couple is a Christian and the other one is godless, that Christian is the only gospel that their partner will ever hear. They've got to remember that as they present the love of God to them. So this morning, this sermon ends. And the test for this sermon, the mark of a good sermon, the mark of a good liturgy is about to come on us. You already agree with the sermon. You already understand the biblical text for today. Agreement and understanding are not the problem. The issue before us is what will we do with that which is said and sung and heard. One Sunday at the back of the church, a woman came up to me. Andrew, that was a powerful sermon, she said to me. That remains to be seen,